Gosh, Jim, it's the mirrors. They're the only things I don't like. I mean, they're the only things like last night.
Boy, boy, you've been out in the sun, snorted Jim. That maze there is...
His voice trailed off. He sniffed the cold air blowing out as from an ice house between the tall reflections.
Jim, you were saying?
But Jim said nothing. After a long time, he clapped his hand to the back of his neck.
"It really does,"
he cried in soft amaze.
"What does?"
"Hair. I read it all my life. In scary stories, it stands on end. Mine's doing it now."
"Gosh, Jim, so's mine."
They stood, entranced, with the delicious cold bumps on their necks and the suddenly stiffened small hairs quilled up over their scalps. There was a flourish of light and shadow. Bumping out through the mirror maze, they saw two, four, a dozen Miss Foleys. They didn't know which one was real, so they waved to all of them. But none of the Miss Foleys saw or waved back. Blind she walked. Blind she tacked her nails to cold glass.
"Miss Foley!"
Her eyes, flexed wide as from blasts of photographic powder, were skinned white like a statue's. Deep under the glass she spoke, she murmured, she whimpered. Now she cried, now she shouted, now she yelled. She knocked glass with her head, her elbows tilted drunken as a light-blind moth, raised her hands in claws.
"Oh, God, help!"
she wailed.
"Help, oh, God!"
Jim and Will saw their own faces, pale, their own eyes wide in the mirrors as they plunged.
"Miss Foley, here!"
Jim cracked his brow.
"This way!"
But Will found only cold glass. A hand flew from empty space, an old woman's hand sinking for the last time. It seized anything to save itself. The anything was Will. She pulled him under.
"Will! Jim! Jim!"
And Jim held him, and he held her, and pulled her free of the silently rushing mirrors coming in from the desolate seas. They stepped into sunlight. Miss Foley, one hand to her bruised cheek, bleated, muttered, then laughed quickly, then gasped and wiped her eyes.
"Thank you, Will. Jim, oh, thank you. I'd have drowned. I mean, oh, well, you were right. My God, did you see her? She's lost, drowned in there. Poor girl. Oh, the poor lost sweet. Save her. Oh, we must save her."
"Miss Foley, boy, you're hurting." Will firmly removed her fists from clenching the flesh of his arm.
"There's no one in there. I saw her. Please, look, save her."
Will jumped to the maze entrance and stopped. The ticket-taker gave him an idle glance of contempt. Will backed away to Miss Foley.
"I swear, no one went in ahead or after you, ma'am. It's my fault. I joked about the water. You must have got mixed up, lost and scared."
But if she heard, she went on biting the back of her hand. Her voice, the voice of someone, come out of the sea, after no air, a long dread time, deep, no hope of life, and now set free.
"Gone. She's at the bottom. Poor girl. I knew her. I know you," I said when I first saw her a minute ago. I waved. She waved. "Hello?" I ran. Bang, I fell. She fell. A dozen, a thousand of her fell. "Wait," I said. Oh, she looked so fine, so lovely, so young. But it scared me. "What are you doing here?" I said.
"Why, I think," she said.
"I'm real. You're not." She laughed, way underwater. She ran off in the maze. "We must find her before—"
Miss Foley, Will's arm around her, took a last trembling breath and grew strangely quiet. Jim was staring deep into those cold mirrors, looking for sharks that could not be seen.
"Miss Foley," he said, "what did she look like?"
Miss Foley's voice was pale, but calm.
"The fact is, she looked like myself many,
many years ago. I'll go home now, she said. Miss Foley, we'll...
No, stay. I'm just fine. Have fun, boys. Enjoy.
And she walked slowly away, alone, down the midway. Somewhere a vast animal made water. Ammonia made the wind turn ancient as it passed. I'm leaving, said Will. Will, said Jim, we're staying until sundown, boy, dark sundown, and figure it all. You chicken? No, murmured Will. But anybody want to dive back in that maze? Jim gazed fiercely deep into the bottomless sea, where now only the pure light glanced back at itself, held up emptiness upon emptiness, beyond emptiness, before their eyes. Nobody. Jim let his heart beat twice. I guess. Chapter 16. A bad thing happened at sunset. Jim vanished. Through noon and afternoon, they had screamed up half the rides, knocked over dirty milk bottles, smashed Cupid doll winning plates, smelling, listening, looking their way through the autumn crowd, trampling the leafy sawdust. And then, quite suddenly, Jim was gone. And Will, not asking anyone but himself, absolutely silent, certain, sure, walked steadily through the late crowd as the sky was turning plum-colored until he came to the maze and paid his dime and stepped up inside and called softly just one time. Jim. And Jim was there. Half in, half out of the cold glass tides, like someone abandoned on a seashore when a close friend has gone far out, and there is wonder if he will ever come back. Jim stood as if he had not moved so much as an eyelash in 5 minutes, staring, his mouth half open, waiting for the next wave to come in and show him more. Jim, get out of there! Will, Jim sighed faintly, let me be. Like heck! With one leap, Will grabbed Jim's belt and hauled. Shuffling backward, Jim didn't seem to know he was being dragged from the maze, for he kept protesting in awe at some unseen wonder. Oh, Will! Oh, Willie! Will! Oh, Willie! Jim, you nut! I'm taking you home! What? 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 They were in the cold air. The sky was darker than plums now, with a few clouds burning late sunfire above. The sunfire flamed on Jim's feverish cheeks, his open lips, his wide and terribly rich green shining eyes. Jim, what did you see in there? The same as Miss Foley? What? What? I'm going to bust your nose. Come on! He hustled, pulled, shoved, half-carried this fever, this elation, this unstruggling friend. Can't tell you, Will. Wouldn't believe. Can't tell you. In there. Oh, in there. In there. Shut up! Will socked his arm. Scare heck out of me, just like she scared us? Bugs! It's almost supper time. Folks will think we're dead and buried. They were striding now, slashing the autumn grass with their shoes, beyond the tents in the hay-smelling leaf-mold fields. Will glaring at town, Jim staring back at the high, now darkening banners as the last of the sun hid under the earth. Will, we gotta come back. Tonight. Okay, come back alone. Jim stopped. You wouldn't let me come back alone? You're always going to be around, aren't you, Will, to protect me? Look who needs protection. Will laughed. And then didn't laugh again, for Jim was looking at him, the last wild light dying in his mouth and caught in the thin hollows of his nostrils and in his suddenly deep-set eyes. You'll always be with me, huh, Will? Jim simply breathed warm upon him, and his blood stirred with the old, the familiar answers. Yes, yes, you know it. Yes, yes. And turning together, they stumbled over a clanking dark mound of leather bag. Chapter 17. They stood for a long moment over the huge leather bag. Almost secretively, Will kicked it. It made a sound of iron indigestion. "Why?" said Will. "That belongs to the lightning rod salesman." Jim slipped his hand through the leather mouth and hefted forth a metal shaft clustered with chimeras, Chinese dragons all fang, eyeball and moss-green armor all cross and crescent. Every symbol around the world that made men safe or seemed to clung here, grieving the boy's hands with odd weight and meaning. Storm never came, but he went. Where, and why did he leave his bag? They both looked to the carnival, where dusk colored the canvas billows. Shadows ran coolly out to engulf them. People in cars honked home in tired commotions. Boys on skeleton bikes whistled dogs after. Soon night would own the midway, while shadows rode the Ferris wheel up to cloud the stars. "People," said Jim, "don't leave their whole life lying around. This is everything that old man owned. Something important," Jim breathed soft fire, "made him forget. So he just walked off and left this here." "What? What's so important you forget everything?" "Why," Jim examined his friend curiously, twilight in his face, "no one can tell you. You find out yourself. Mysteries and mysteries. Storm salesman, storm salesman's bag. If we don't look now, we might never know." "Jim, in 10 minutes?" "Sure. Midway'll be dark. Everyone home for dinner. Just us alone. But won't it feel great? Just us. And here we go. Back in." Passing the mirror maze, they saw two armies. A billion Jims, a billion Wills, collide, melt, vanish. And like those armies, so vanished the real army of people. The boys stood alone among the encampments of dusk, thinking of all the boys in town sitting down to warm food in bright rooms. Chapter 18. The red-lettered sign said, "Out of order, keep off." "Sign's been up all day. I don't believe signs," said Jim. They peered in at the merry-go-round, which lay under a dry rattle and roar of wind-tumbled oak trees. Its horses, goats, antelopes, zebras, speared through their spines with brass javelins, hung contorted as in a death rictus, asking mercy with their fright-colored eyes, seeking revenge with their panic-colored teeth. "Don't look broke to me." Jim ambled across the clanking chain, leaped to a turntable surface vast as the moon, among the frantic but forever spelled beasts.
"Jim!"
"Well, this is the only ride we haven't looked at, so—" Jim swayed. The lunatic carousel world stirred a tilt with his lean bulk. He strolled through brass forests amidst animal rousts. He swung astride a plum-dusk stallion.
"Ho, boy, git!"
A man rose from machinery darkness.
"Jim!"
Reaching out from the shadows among the calliope tubes and moon-skin drums, the man hoisted Jim, yelling out on the air,
"Help, Will! Help!"
Will leaped through the animals. The man smiled easily, welcomed him handily, swung him high beside Jim. They stared down at bright flame-red hair, bright flame-blue eyes, and rippling biceps.
"Out of order," said the man. "Can't you read?"
"Put them down," said a gentle voice. Hung high, Jim and Will glanced over at a second man standing tall beyond the chains. "Down," he said again, and they were carried through the brass forest of wild but uncomplaining brutes and set in the dust.
"We were,"
said Will, "curious." This second man was tall as a lamppost. His pale face, lunar puckmarks denting it, cast light on those who stood below. His vest was the color of fresh blood. His eyebrows, his hair, his suit were licorice black, and the sun-yellow gem which stared from the tie-pin thrust in his cravat was the same unblinking shade and bright crystal as his eyes. But in this instant, Swiftly and with utter clearness, it was the suit which fascinated Will. For it seemed woven of boar bramble, clock-spring hair, bristle, and a sort of ever-trembling, ever-glistening dark hemp. The suit caught light and stirred like a bed of black tweed thorns, interminably itching, covering the man's long body with motion so it seemed he should excruciate, cry out, and tear the clothes free. Yet here he stood, moon calm, inhabiting his itch-weed suit and watching Jim's mouth with his yellow eyes. He never looked once at Will. The name is Dark. He flourished a white calling card. It turned blue. Whisper. Red. Whisk. A green man dangled from a tree, stamped on the card. Flit. Shh. Dark. And my friend with the red hair there is Mr. Cougar, of Cougar and Dark's Flip Flick. Shh. Names appeared, disappeared on the white square. Combined shadow shows. Tick wash. A mushroom witch stirred moldering herb pots, and Cross-Continental Pandemonium Theater Company. He handed the card to Jim. It now read, "Our specialty to examine, oil, polish, and repair Death Watch Beetles." Calmly, Jim read it. Calmly, Jim put a fist into his copious and richly treasured pockets, rummaged, and held out his hand. On his palm lay a dead brown insect. "Here," Jim said. "Fix this." Mr. Dark exploded his laugh. "Superb, I will." He extended his hand, his shirt sleeve pulled up. Bright purple, black, green, and lightning blue eels, worms, and Latin scrolls slid to view on his wrist. "Boy," cried Will, "you must be the tattooed man." "No," Jim studied the stranger. "The illustrated man. There's a difference." Mr. Dark nodded, pleased. "What's your name, boy?" "Don't tell him," thought Will, and stopped. "Why not?" he wondered. "Why?" Jim's lips hardly twitched. "Simon," he said. He smiled to show it was a lie. Mr. Dark smiled to show he knew it. "Want to see more? Simon?" Jim wouldn't give him the satisfaction of a nod. Slowly, with great mouth-working pleasure, Mr. Dark pushed his sleeve high to his elbow. Jim stared. The arm was like a cobra, weaving, bobbing, swaying to strike. Mr. Dark clenched his fist, wriggled his fingers. The muscles danced. Will wanted to run around and see, but could only watch, thinking, "Jim, oh, Jim." For there stood Jim, and there was this tall man, each examining the other as if he were a reflection in a shop window late at night. The tall man's brambled suit shadowed out now to color Jim's cheeks and storm over his wide and drinking eyes, with a look of rain instead of the sharp, cat-green they always were. Jim stood like a runner who has come a long way, fever in his mouth, hands open to receive any gift. And right now it was a gift of pictures twitched in pantomime as Mr. Dark made his illustrations jerk cold-skinned over his warm-pulsed wrist, as the stars came out above, and Jim stared and Will couldn't see, and a long way off the last of the town people went away toward town in their warm cars, and Jim said faintly, "Gosh," and Mr. Dark rolled down his sleeve. "Show's over. Supper time. Carnival's shut up until 7. Everyone out. Come back, Simon, and ride the merry-go-round when it's fixed. Take this card. Free ride." Jim stared at the hidden wrist and put the card in his pocket. "So long." Jim ran. Will ran. Jim whirled, glanced back, leaped, and for the second time in the hour, vanished. Will looked up into the tree where Jim squirmed on a limb, hidden. He looked back. Mr. Dark and Mr. Cougar were turned away, busy with the merry-go-round. "Quick, Will! Jim! They'll see you! Jump!" Will jumped. Jim hauled him up. The great tree shook. A wind roared by in the sky. Jim helped him cling, gasping among the branches. "Jim, we don't belong here!" "Shut up! Look!" whispered Jim. Somewhere in the carousel machinery, there were taps and brass knockings, a faint squeal and whistle of calliope steam.
What was on his arm, Jim?
A picture.
Yeah, but what kind?
It was... Jim shut his eyes. It was a picture of a snake. That's it, snake. But when he opened his eyes, he wouldn't look at Will.
Okay, if you don't want to tell me.
I told you, Will, a snake. I'll get him to show it to you later. You want that? No, thought Will. I don't want that. He looked down at the billion footprints left in the sawdust on the empty midway, and suddenly it was a lot closer to midnight than to noon.
I'm going home.
Sure, Will, go on. Mirror mazes, old teacher ladies, lost lightning rod bags, lightning rod salesmen disappear, snake pictures dancing, unbroken merry-go-rounds, and you want to go home? Sure, old friend Will. So long. Will started down the tree and froze.
All clear?
Cried a voice below.
Clear,
someone shouted at the far end of the midway. Mr. Dark moved, not 50 feet away, to a red control box near the merry-go-round ticket booth. He glared in all directions. He glared into the tree. Will hugged. Jim hugged the limb, tightened into smallness.
Start up!
With a pop, a bang, a jangle of reins, a lift and downfall, a rise and descent of brass, the carousel moved.
But, thought Will, it's broke, out of order.
He flicked a glance at Jim, who pointed wildly down. The merry-go-round was running, yes, but it was running backward. The small calliope inside the carousel machinery rattle-snapped its nervous stallion-shivering drums, clashed its harvest moon cymbals, toothed its castanets, and throatily choked and sobbed its reeds, whistles, and baroque flutes.
The music, Will thought. It's backwards, too.
Mr. Dark jerked about, glanced up as if he had heard Will's thought. A wind shook the trees in black tumults. Mr. Dark shrugged and looked away. The carousel wheeled faster, shrieking, plunging, going round about, back. Now Mr. Cougar, with his flaming red hair and fire-blue eyes, was pacing the midway, making a last check. He stood under their tree. Will could have let spit down on him. Then the calliope gave a particularly violent cry of foul murder, which made dogs howl in far countries, and Mr. Cougar, spinning, ran and leaped on the back-whirling universe of animals, who, tail first, head last, pursued an endless circling night toward unfound and never-to-be-discovered destinations. Hand-slapping brass poles, he flung himself into a seat where, with his bristly red hair, pink face, and incredibly sharp blue eyes, he sat. Silent, going back around, the music squealing swift back with him like insucked breath. The music, thought Will. What is it? And how do I know it's backside first? He hugged the limb, tried to catch the tune, then hum it forward in his head. But the brass bells, the drums hammered his chest, revved his heart so he felt his pulse reverse. His blood turned back in perverse thrusts through all his flesh. So he was nearly shaken free to fall, so all he did was clutch, hang pale, and drink the sight of the backward-turning machine, and Mr. Dark, alert at the controls, on the sidelines. It was Jim who first noticed the new thing happening, for he kicked Will once. Will looked over, and Jim nodded frantically at the man in the machine as he came around the next time. Mr. Cougar's face was melting like pink wax. His hands were becoming doll's hands. His bones sank away beneath his clothes. His clothes then shrank down to fit his dwindling frame. His face flickered going, and each time around he melted more. Will saw Jim's head shift, circling. The carousel wheeled, a great back-drifting lunar dream, the horses thrusting, the music in-gasped after, while Mr. Cougar, as simple as shadows, as simple as light, as simple as time, got younger and younger and younger. Each time he wheeled to view, he sat alone with his bones, which shaped like warm candles burning away to tender years. He gazed serenely at the fiery constellations, the children inhabited trees which went away from him as he removed himself from them, and his nose diminished, and his sweet wax ears reshaped themselves to small pink roses. Now, no longer 40 where he had begun his back spiral journey, Mr. Cougar was 19. Around went the reverse parade of horse, pole, music, man become young man fast rendered down to boy. Mr. Cougar was 17, 16. Another, and another time around, under the sky and trees, and Will whispering, Jim counting the times around, around, while the night air warmed to summer heat by friction of sun-metal brass, the passionate, back-turned flight of beasts wore the wax doll down and down and washed him clean with still stranger musics, until all ceased, all died away to stillness, the calliope shut up its brassworks, the ironmongery machines hissed off, and with a last faint whine like desert sands blown back up Arabian hourglasses, the carousel rocked on seaweed waters and stood still. The figure, seated in the carved white wooden sleigh chair, was very small. Mr. Cougar was 12 years old.
No.
Will's mouth shaped the word.
No.
Jim's did the same. The small shape stepped down from the silent world, its face in shadow, but its hands, newborn, wrinkled pink, held out in raw carnival lamplight. The strange man-boy shot his gaze up, down, smelling fright somewhere, terror and awe in the vicinity. Will balled himself tight and shut his eyes. He felt the terrible gaze shoot through the leaves like blown needle darts pass on. Then, rabbit running, the small shape lit off down the empty midway. Jim was the first to stir the leaves aside. Mr. Dark was gone, too, in the evening hush. It seemed to take Jim forever to fall down to earth. Will fell after, and they both stood clamorous with alarms, shaken by concussions of silent pantomime, blasted by events all the more numbing because they ran off into night and unknown. And it was Jim who spoke from their mutual confusion and trembling as each held to the other's arm, seeing the small shadow rush, luring them across the meadow.
Oh, Will, I wish we could go home. I wish we could eat. But it's too late. We saw... We got to see more, don't we?
Lord, said Will miserably, I guess we do. And they ran together, following they didn't know what, on, out, and away, to who could possibly guess where. Chapter 19. Out on the highway, the last faint watercolors of the sun were gone beyond the hills, and whatever they were chasing was so far ahead as to be only a swift fleck, now shown in lamplight, now set free, running into dark.
28, gasped Jim. 28 times. The merry-go-round, sure.
Will jerked his head.
28 times, I counted, it went around back.
Up ahead, the small shape stopped and looked back. Jim and Will ducked in by a tree and let it move on.
It... thought Will. Why do I think it? He's a boy. He's a man. No, it is something that has changed. That's what it is.
They reached and passed the city limits, and swiftly jogging, Will said,
Jim, there must have been two people on that ride, Mr. Cougar and this boy, and...
No, I never took my eyes off him. They ran by the barber shop. Will saw, but did not see a sign in the window. He read, but did not read. He remembered. He forgot. He plunged on.
Hey, he's turned on Culpeper Street. Quick!
They rounded a corner.
He's gone.
The street lay long and empty in the lamplight. Leaves blew on the hopscotch-chalked sidewalks.
Will, Miss Foley lives on this street. Sure, fourth house, but...
Jim strolled, casually whistling, hands in pockets. Will with him. At Miss Foley's house, they glanced up. In one of the softly lit front windows, someone stood looking out. A boy, no more and no less than 12 years old.
Will,
cried Jim softly.
That boy.
Her nephew.
Nephew, heck, keep your head away. Maybe he can read lips. Walk slow, to the corner and back. You see his face? The eyes, Will. That's one part of people don't change, young, old, 6 or 60.
Boy's face, sure, but the eyes were the eyes of...
Mr. Cougar!
No!
Yes.
They both stopped to enjoy the swift pound of each other's heart.
Keep moving.
They moved. Jim held Will's arm tight, leading him.
You did see Mr. Cougar's eyes, huh? When he held us up, fit to crack our heads together? You did see the boy just off the ride? He looked right up near me, hid in the tree, and, boy, it was like opening the door of a furnace. I'll never forget those eyes. And there they are now, in the window.
Turn around. Now, let's walk back easy and nice and slow. We gotta warn Miss Foley what's hiding in her house, don't we?
Jim, look, you don't give a darn about Miss Foley or what's in her house.
Jim said nothing. Walking arm in arm with Will, he just looked over at his friend and blinked once, let the lids come down over his shiny green eyes and go up. And again Will had the feeling about Jim that he had always had, about an old, almost forgotten dog. Sometime every year, that dog, good for many months, just ran on out into the world and didn't come back for days, and finally did limp back all burred and scrawny and odorous of swamps and dumps. He had rolled in the dirty mangers and foul dropping places of the world simply to turn home with a funny little smile pinned to his muzzle. Dad had named the dog Plato, the wilderness philosopher, for you saw by his eyes there was nothing he didn't know. Returned, the dog would live in innocence again, tread patterns of grace for months, then vanish and the whole thing start over. Now, walking here, he thought he heard Jim whimper under his breath. He could feel the bristles stiffen all over Jim. He felt Jim's ears flatten, saw him sniff the new dark. Jim smelt smells that no one knew, heard ticks from clocks that told another time. Even his tongue was strange now, moving along his lower and now his upper lip as they stopped in front of Miss Foley's house again. The front window was empty.
"Going to walk up and ring the bell," said Jim.
"What? Meet him face to face?"
"My aunt's eyebrows, Will. We got to check, don't we? Shake his paw, stare him in his good eye, or some such? And if it is him,
we don't warn Miss Foley right in front of him, do we?
We'll phone her later, dumb. Up we go."
Will sighed and let himself be walked up the steps, wanting but not wanting to know if the boy in this house had Mr. Cougar hid, but showing like a firefly between his eyelashes. Jim rang the bell.
"What if he answers?" Will demanded.
"Boy, I'm so scared I could sprinkle dust.
Jim, why aren't you scared? Why?"
Jim examined both of his untrembled hands.
"I'll be darned," he gasped. "You're right. I'm not."
The door swung wide. Miss Foley beamed out at them.
"Jim, Will, how nice."
"Miss Foley," blurted Will, "you okay?"
Jim glared at him. Miss Foley laughed.
"Why shouldn't I be?"
Will flushed.
"All those darn carnival mirrors. Nonsense. I've forgotten all about it. Well, boys, are you coming in?"
She held the door wide. Will shuffled a foot and stopped. Beyond Miss Foley, a beaded curtain hung like a dark blue thunder shower across the parlor entry. Where the colored rain touched the floor, a pair of dusty small shoes poked out. Just beyond the downpour, the evil boy loitered.
"Evil?" Will blinked. "Why evil?"
"Because." "Because" was reason enough. "A boy, yes, and evil."
"Robert?"
Miss Foley turned, calling through the dark blue, always falling beads of rain. She took Will's hand and gently pulled him inside.
"Come meet two of my students."
The rain poured aside. A fresh candy-pink hand broke through all by itself as if testing the weather in the hall.
"Good grief," thought Will. He'll look me in the eye. See the merry-go-round and himself on it, moving back, back. I know it's printed on my eyeball like I've been struck by lightning. Miss Foley, said Will. Now a pink face stuck out through the dim, frozen necklaces of storm. We gotta tell you a terrible thing. Jim struck Will's elbow hard to shut him. Now the body came out through the dark, watery flow of beads. The rain shushed behind the small boy. Miss Foley leaned toward him, expectant. Jim gripped his elbow fiercely. He stammered, flushed, then spat it out. Mr. Crozetti! Quite suddenly, clearly, he saw the sign in the barber's window. The sign seen but not seen as they ran by. Closed on account of illness. Mr. Crozetti, he repeated, and added swiftly, he's dead. What? The barber? The barber? Echoed Jim. See this haircut? Will turned, trembling, his hand to his head. He did it, and we just walked by there, and the sign was up, and people told us. What a shame. Miss Foley was reaching out to fetch the strange boy forward. I'm so sorry. Boys, this is Robert, my nephew from Wisconsin. Jim stuck out his hand. Robert, the nephew, examined it curiously. What are you looking at? He asked. You look familiar, said Jim. Jim, Will yelled to himself. Like an uncle of mine, said Jim, all sweet and calm. The nephew flicked his eyes to Will, who looked only at the floor, afraid the boy would see his eyeballs whirl with the remembered carousel. Crazily, he wanted to hum the backward music. Now, he thought, face him. He looked up straight at the boy, and it was wild and crazy, and the floor sank away beneath, for there was the pink, shiny Halloween mask of a small, pretty boy's face, but almost as if holes were cut where the eyes of Mr. Cougar shone out, old, old eyes as bright as sharp blue stars, and the light from those stars taking a million years to get here.
And through the little nostrils cut in the shiny wax mask, Mr. Cougar's breath went in steam, came out ice, and the Valentine candy tongue moved small behind those trim, white candy kernel teeth.
Mr. Cougar, somewhere behind the eye slits, went blink-click with his insect Kodak pupils. The lenses exploded like suns, then burnt chilly and serene again. He swiveled his glance to Jim. Blink-click. He had Jim flexed, focused, shot, developed, dried, filed away, and dark. Blink. Click. Yet this was only a boy, standing in a hall with two other boys and a woman. And all the while Jim gazed steadily back, feathers unruffled, taking his own pictures of Robert. "Have you boys had supper?" asked Miss Foley. "We're just sitting down." "We gotta go." Everyone looked at Will as if amazed he didn't want to stick here forever. Jim, he stammered, your mom's home alone. Oh, sure, Jim said reluctantly. I know what. The nephew paused for their attention. When their faces turned, Mr. Cougar inside the nephew went silently, blink, click, listening through the toy ears, watching through the toy charm eyes, wetting the doll's mouth with a Pekingese tongue. Join us later for dessert, huh? Dessert? I'm taking Aunt Willa to the carnival. The boy stroked Miss Foley's arm until she laughed nervously. Carnival? Cried Will, and lowered his voice. Miss Foley, you said... I said I was foolish and scared myself, said Miss Foley. It's Saturday night, the best night for tent shows and showing my nephew the sights. Join us? Asked Robert, holding Miss Foley's hand. Later? Great, said Jim. Jim, said Will, we've been out all day. Your mom's sick. I forgot. Jim flashed him a look filled with purest snake poison. Flick. The nephew made an X-ray of both, showing them, no doubt, as cold bones trembling in warm flesh. He stuck out his hand. Tomorrow, then. Meet you by the sideshows. Swell. Jim grabbed the small hand. So long.
Will jumped out the door, then turned with a last agonized appeal to the teacher. Miss Foley?
Yes, Will?
Don't go with that boy, he thought. Don't go near the shows. Stay home. Oh, please. But then he said, Mr. Crozetti's dead. She nodded, touched, waiting for his tears, and while she waited, he dragged Jim outside and the door swung shut on Miss Foley, and the pink, small face with the lenses in it going blink, click, snapshotting two incoherent boys and them fumbling down the steps in October dark, while the merry-go-round started again in Will's head, rushing while the leaves in the trees above cracked and fried with wind. Aside, Will spluttered, Jim, you shook hands with him. Mr. Cougar, you're not going to meet him.
It's Mr. Cougar, all right. Boy, those eyes. If I met him tonight, we'd solve the whole shooting match. What's eating you, Will?
Eating me?
At the bottom of the steps now, they tussled in fierce and frantic whispers, glancing up at the empty windows where now and again a shadow passed. Will stopped. The music turned in his head. Stunned, he squinched his eyes.
Jim, the music that the Calliope played when Mr. Cougar got younger...
Yeah?
It was the funeral march played backwards.
Which funeral march?
Which? Jim, Chopin only wrote one tune, the funeral march.
But why played backward?
Mr. Cougar was marching away from the grave, not toward it. Wasn't he getting younger, smaller instead of older, and dropping dead?
Willie, you're terrific.
Sure, but...
Will stiffened.
He's there. The window again. Wave at him. So long. Now, walk and whistle something. Not Chopin, for gosh sakes.
Jim waved. Will waved. Both whistled. Oh, Susanna. The shadow gestured small in the high window. The boys hurried off down the street.
This ends Disc 2. Something Wicked This Way Comes. Disc 3.
Chapter 20. Two suppers were waiting in two houses. One parent yelled at Jim, two parents yelled at Will. Both were sent hungry upstairs. It started at 7 o'clock. It was done by 7:03. Doors slammed, locks clacked, clocks ticked. Will stood by the door. The telephone was locked away outside, and even if he called, Miss Foley wouldn't answer. By now she'd be gone beyond town. Good grief. Anyway, what could he say? Miss Foley, that nephew's no nephew? That boy's no boy? Wouldn't she laugh? She would. For the nephew was a nephew. The boy was a boy. Or seemed such. He turned to the window. Jim, across the way, stood facing the same dilemma in his room. Both struggled. It was too early to raise the windows and stage whisper to each other. Parents below were busy growing crystal radio peach fuzz in their ears, alert. The boys threw themselves on their separate beds in their separate houses, probed mattresses for chocolate chunks put away against the lean years, and ate moodily. Clocks ticked. 9, 9:30, 10. The knob rattled softly as Dad unlocked the door.
Dad, thought Will, come in. We gotta talk.
But Dad chewed his breath in the hall. Only his confusion, his always puzzled, half-bewildered face could be felt beyond the door. He won't come in, thought Will. Walk around, talk around, back off from a thing, yes, but come sit, listen. When had he, when would he, ever...
"Will?" Will quickened.
"Will?" said Dad. "Be careful."
"Careful?" cried Mother, coming along the hall. "Is that all you're going to say?"
"What else?"
Dad was going downstairs now.
"He jumps, I creep. How can you get two people together like that? He's too young, I'm too old. God, sometimes I wish we'd never..."
The door shut. Dad was walking away on the sidewalk. Will wanted to fling up the window and call. Suddenly, Dad was so lost in the night,
Not me. Don't worry about me, Dad, he thought. You, Dad, stay in. It's not safe. Don't go. But he didn't shout. And when he softly raised the window at last, the street was empty, and he knew it would be just a matter of time before that light went on in the library across town. When rivers flooded, when fire fell from the sky. What a fine place the library was, the many rooms, the books. With luck, no one found you. How could they? When you were off to Tanganyika in 98, Cairo in 1812, Florence in 1492. Careful. What did Dad mean? Did he smell the panic? Had he heard the music? Had he prowled near the tents? No, not Dad, ever. Will tossed a marble over at Jim's window. Tap. Silence. He imagined Jim seated alone in the dark, his breath like phosphorus on the air, ticking away to himself. Tap. Silence. This wasn't like Jim. Always before, the window slid up. Jim's head popped out, ripe with yells, secret hissings, giggles, riots, and rebel charges. Jim, I know you're there. Tap. Silence. Dad's out in the town. Miss Foley's with you-know-who, he thought. Good gosh, Jim, we gotta do something tonight. He threw a last small marble. Tap. It fell to the hushed grass below. Jim didn't come to the window. Tonight, thought Will. He bit his knuckles. He lay back, cold, straight, stiff, on his bed. Chapter 21. In the alley behind the house was a huge, old-fashioned pine plank boardwalk. It had been there ever since Will remembered, since civilization unthinkingly poured forth the dull, hard, unresisting cement sidewalks. His grandfather, a man of strong sentiment and wild impulse who let nothing go without a roar, had flexed his muscles in favor of this vanishing landmark, and, with a dozen handymen, had toted a good 40 feet of the walk into the alley, where it had lain like the skeleton of some indefinable monster through the years, baked by sun, lushly rotted by rains. The town clock struck 10. Lying abed, Will realized he had been thinking about Grandfather's vast gift from another time. He was waiting to hear the boardwalk speak. In what language? Well, boys have never been known to go straight up to houses to ring bells to summon forth friends. They prefer to chunk dirt at clapboards, hurl acorns down roof shingles, or leave mysterious notes flapping from kites stranded on attic windowsills. So it was with Jim and Will. Late nights, if there were gravestones to be leapfrogged or dead cats to be hurled down sour people's chimneys, one or the other of the boys would prowl out under the moon and xylophone dance on that old, hollow, echoing, musical boardwalk. Over the years, they had tuned the walk, prying up an A board and nailing it here, lifting up an F board and pounding it back down there until the walk was as near onto being melodious as weather, and two entrepreneurs could fashion it. By the tune treaded out, you could tell the night's venture. If Will heard Jim tromping hard on 7 or 8 notes of Way Down Upon the Suwannee River, he scrambled out knowing it was moon trail time on the creek leading to the river caves. If Jim heard Will out leaping about like a scalded Airedale on the timbers and the tune remotely suggested marching through Georgia, it meant plums, peaches, or apples were ripe enough to get sick on out beyond town. So this night, Will held his breath, waiting for some tune to call him forth. What kind of tune would Jim play to represent the carnival, Miss Foley, Mr. Cougar, and or the evil nephew? 10:15, 10:30, no music. Will didn't like Jim sitting in his room, thinking, what? Of the mirror maze? What had he seen there? And seeing, what did he plan? Will stirred, restively. Especially he didn't like to think of Jim with no father between him and the tent shows, and all that lay dark in the meadows, and a mother who wanted him around so very much he just had to get away, get out, breathe free night air, no free night waters running toward bigger, freer seas. Jim, he thought, Let's have the music. And at 10:35 it came. He heard, or thought he heard, Jim, out in the starlight, leaping way up and coming flat down like a spring tomcat on the vast xylophone. And the tune, was or wasn't it like the funeral dirge played backwards by the old carousel calliope? Will started to raise his window to be sure, but suddenly Jim's window slid quietly up. He hadn't been down on the boards. It was just Will's wild wish that made the tune. Will started to whisper, but stopped. For Jim, without a word, scuttled down the drainpipe. Jim, Will thought. Jim on the lawn stiffened as if hearing his name. You're not going without me, Jim. Jim glanced swiftly up. If he saw Will, he made no sign. Jim, Will thought, we're still pals, smell things nobody else smells, hear things no one else hears, got the same blood, run the same way. Now, this first time ever, you're sneaking out, ditching me. But the driveway was empty. A salamander flicking the hedge, there went Jim. Will was out the window, down the trellis and over the hedge before he thought, I'm alone. If I lose, Jim, it's the first ever I'll be out alone at night, too. And where am I going? Wherever Jim goes. Lord, let me keep up. Jim skimmed like a dark owl after a mouse. Will loped like a weaponless hunter after the owl. They sailed their shadows over October lawns. And when they stopped, there was Miss Foley's house. Chapter 22. Jim glanced back. Will became a bush behind a bush, a shadow among shadows with two starlight rounds of glass, his eyes holding the image of Jim calling up in a whisper toward the second-floor windows. Hey there! Hey! Good grief, thought Will. He wants to be slit and stuffed with broken mirror maze glass. Hey! Called Jim softly. You! A shadow uprose on a dim-lit shade above. A small shadow. The nephew had brought Miss Foley home. They were in their separate rooms, or, oh Lord, thought Will, I hope she's safe home. Maybe, like the lightning rod salesman, she... Hey! Jim gazed up with that funny, warm look of breathless anticipation he often had nights in summer at the Shadow Show window theater in that house a few streets over. Looking up with love, with devotion, like a cat, Jim waited for some special dark mouse to run forth. Crouched, now slowly he seemed to grow taller, as if his bones were pulled by the thing in the window above which now suddenly vanished. Will ground his teeth. He felt the shadow sift down through the house like a cold breath. He could wait no longer. He leaped forth. Jim! He seized Jim's arm. Will, what are you doing here? Jim, don't talk to him. Get out of here. My gosh, he'll chew and spit out your bones. Jim writhed himself free. Will, go home. You'll spoil everything. He scares me, Jim. What do you want from him? This afternoon in the maze, did you see something? Yes. For gosh sakes, what? Will grabbed Jim's shirt front, felt his heart bang under the chest bones. Jim! Let go. Jim was terribly quiet. If he knows you're here, he won't come out. Willie, if you don't let go, I'll remember when... When what? When I'm older, darn it. Older. Jim spat. As if he was struck by lightning, Will jumped back. He looked at his empty hands and put one up to wipe the spittle off his cheek. Oh, Jim, he mourned. And he heard the merry-go-round, motioning, gliding on black night waters around, around, and Jim on a black stallion riding off and about, circling in tree shadow, and he wanted to cry out, Look, the merry-go-round! You wanted to go forward, don't you, Jim? Forward instead of back, and you on it, around, once and you're 15, circling and you're 16, 3 times more and 19, music and you're 20 and off, standing tall. Not Jim anymore, still 13, almost 14, on the empty midway with me, small me, young me, scared. Will hauled off and hit Jim hard on the nose. Then he jumped Jim, wrapped him tight, and toppled him, rolling down, yelling in the bushes. He slapped Jim's mouth, stuffed it, mashed it, full of fingers to snap and bite at, suffocating the angry grunts and yells. The front door opened. Will crushed the air out of Jim, lay heavy on him, fisting his mouth tight. Something stood on the porch. A tiny shadow scanned the town, searching for but not finding Jim. But it was just the boy, Robert. The friendly nephew come almost casually forth, hands in pockets, whistling under his breath, to breathe the night air as boys do, curious for adventures that they themselves must make, that rarely happen by. Thresh tight, mortally locked and bound to Jim, staring up, Will was all the more shaken to see the normal boy, the airy glance, the unassuming poise, the small, the easy self in which no man at all was revealed by streetlight. At any moment, Robert, in full cry, might leap to play with them, tangle legs, lock arms, bark snap like pups in May, the whole thing end with them strewn in laughing, tears on the lawn, the terror spent, the fear melted off in dew, a dream of nothings quickly gone, as such dreams go when the eye snaps wide. For there indeed stood the nephew, his face round, fresh, and cream smooth as a peach. And he was smiling down at the two boys he now saw, locked limb in limb on the grass. Then, swiftly, he darted in. He must have run upstairs, scrabbled about, and hurtled down again, for suddenly, as the two boys out-thrashed, out-gripped, outraged each other, there was a rain of tinkling, rattling glitter on the lawn. The nephew leaped the porch rail and landed, panther soft, embedded in his shadow on the grass. His hands were delicious with stars. These he liberally sprinkled. They thudded, slithered, winked at Jim's side. Both boys lay stricken by the rain of gold and diamond fire that pelted them. "Help! Police!" cried Robert. Will was so shocked he let go Jim. Jim was so shocked he let go of Will. Both reached at the same time for the cold, strewn ice. Good grief! A bracelet! A ring! A necklace! Robert kicked. Two trash cans at the curb fell, thundering. A bedroom light above flicked on. Police! Robert threw one last spray of glitter at their feet, shut up his fresh peach smile like locking an explosion away in a box, and shot away down the street. Wait! Jim jumped. We won't hurt you! Will tripped him. Jim fell. The window upstairs opened. Miss Foley leaned out. Jim on his knees held a woman's wristwatch. Will blinked at a necklace in his hands. "Who's there?" she cried. "Jim? Will? What's that you got?" But Jim was running. Will stopped only long enough to see the window empty itself with a wail as Miss Foley pulled in to see her room. When he heard her full scream, he knew she had discovered the burglary. Running, Will knew he was doing just what the nephew wanted. He should turn back, pick up the jewels, tell Miss Foley what happened. But he must save Jim. Far back, he heard Miss Foley's new cries turn on more lights. "Will Halloway, Jim Nightshade, Night Runners, Thieves!" "That's us," thought Will. "Oh, my Lord, that's us. No one'll believe anything we say from now on. Not about carnivals, not about carousels, not about mirrors or evil nephews, not about nothing." And so they ran. Three animals in starlight. A black otter, a tomcat, a rabbit. Me, thought Will, I'm the rabbit. And he was white and much afraid.
Chapter 23. They hit the carnival grounds at a good 20 miles an hour, give or take a mile, the nephew in the lead, Jim close behind, and Will further back, gasping, shotgun blasts of fatigue in his feet, his head, his heart. The nephew, running scared, looked back, not smiling. "Fooled him," thought Will. "He figured I wouldn't follow. Figured I'll call the police, get stuck, not be believed, or run, hide. Now he's scared I'll beat the tar out of him and wants to jump on that ride and run around getting older and bigger than me. Oh, Jim, Jim, we gotta stop him, keep him young, tear his skin off." But he knew from Jim's running there'd be no help from Jim. Jim wasn't running after nephews.
He was running toward free rides. The nephew vanished around a tent far ahead. Jim followed. By the time Will reached the midway, the merry-go-round was popping to life. In the pulse, the din, the squeal-around of music, the small, fresh-faced nephew rode the great platform in a swirl of midnight dust. Jim, 10 feet back, watched the horses leap, his eyes striking fire from the high-jumped stallion's eyes. The merry-go-round was going forward. Jim leaned at it. "Jim!" cried Will. The nephew swept from sight, borne around by the machine. Drifted back again, he stretched out pink fingers, urging softly, "Jim!" Jim twitched 1 foot forward. "No!" Will plunged. He knocked, seized, held Jim. They toppled, they fell in a heap. The nephew, surprised, whisked on in darkness. 1 year older. 1 year older, thought Will, on the earth. 1 year taller, bigger, meaner. "Oh, God, Jim, quick!" He jumped up, ran to the control box, the complex mysteries of brass switch and porcelain covering and sizzling wires. He struck the switch, but Jim, behind, babbling, tore at Will's hands. "Will, you'll spoil it! No!" Jim knocked the switch full back. Will spun and slapped his face, each clenched the other's elbows, rocked, flailed. They fell against the control box. Will saw the evil boy, a year older still, glide around into night. 5 or 6 more times around, and he'd be bigger than the two of them. "Jim, he'll kill us." "Not me, no." Will felt a sting of electricity. He yelled, pulled back, hit the switch handle. The control box spat. Lightning jumped to the sky. Jim and Will, flung by the blast, lay watching the merry-go-round run wild. The evil boy whistled by, clenched to a brass tree. He cursed, he spat, he wrestled with wind, with centrifuge. He was trying to clutch his way through the horses, the poles, to the outer rim of the carousel. His face came, went, came, went. He clawed, he brayed. The control box erupted blue showers. The carousel jumped and bucked. The nephew slipped. He fell. A black stallion's steel hoof kicked him. Blood printed his brow. Jim hissed, rolled, thrashed. Will, riding him hard, pressing him to grass, trading yell for yell, both fright pale, heart ramming heart. Electric bolts from the switch flushed up in white stars, a gush of fireworks. The carousel spun 30, spun 40. "Will, let me up!" spun 50 times. The calliope howled. Boiled steam ran ancient dry, then played nothing, its keys gibbering as only chitterings boiled up through the vents. Lightning unraveled itself over the sweated, outflung boys, delivered flame to the silent horse stampede to light their way around, around with a figure lying on the platform, no longer a boy, but a man, no longer a man, but a more than a man, and even more, much more than that, around, around.
Look, Will, he's...
gasped Jim and began to sob because it was the only thing to do. Locked down, nailed tight.
"Oh, God, Will, get up. We got to make it run backward."
Lights flashed on in the tents, but no one came out. "Why not?" Will thought crazily. "The explosions? The electric storm? Do the freaks think the whole world's jumping through the midway? Where's Mr. Dark? In town? Up to no good? What? Where? Why?" He thought he heard the agonized figure sprawled on the carousel platform drum his heart super fast, then slow, fast, slow, very fast, very slow, incredibly fast, then as slow as the moon going down the sky on a white night in winter. Someone, something on the carousel wailed faintly. "Thank God it's dark," thought Will. "Thank God I can't see.
There goes someone. Here comes something. There, whatever it is, goes again. There, there."
A bleak shadow on the shuddering machine tried to stagger up, but it was late. Late. Later still, very late, latest of all, oh, very late. The shadow crumbled. The carousel, like the earth spinning, whipped away air, sunlight, sense, and sensibility, leaving only dark, cold, and age. In a final vomit, the switch box blew itself completely apart. All the carnival lights blinked out. The carousel slowed itself through the cold night wind. Will let Jim go. How many times, thought Will, did it go around? 60? 80? 90? How many times, said Jim's face all nightmare, watching the dead carousel shiver and halt in the dead grass, a stopped world now which nothing, not their hearts, hands, or heads could send back anywhere. They walked slowly to the merry-go-round, their shoes whispering. The shadowy figure lay on the near side on the plank floor, its face turned away. One hand hung off the platform. It didn't belong to a boy. It seemed a huge wax hand shriveled by fire. The man's hair was long, spidery, white. It blew like milkweed in the breathing dark. They bent to see the face. The eyes were mummified shut. The nose was collapsed upon gristle. The mouth was a ruined white flower. The petals twisted into a thin wax sheath over the clenched teeth, through which faint bubblings sighed. The man was small inside his clothes, small as a child, but tall, strung out, and old. So old. Very old. Not 90, not 100, no, not 110, but 120 or 130 impossible years old. Will touched. The man was cold as an albino frog. He smelled of moon swamps and old Egyptian bandages. He was something found in museums, wrapped in nicotine linens, sealed in glass. But he was alive, puling like a babe, and shriveling unto death fast, very fast, before their eyes. Will was sick over the side of the carousel. Then, falling against each other, Jim and Will sledge-hammered the insane leaves, the unbelievable grass, the insubstantial earth with their numbed shoes, fleeing off down the midway. Chapter 24. Moths ticked off the high tin-shaded arc light which swung abandoned above the crossroads. Below, in a deserted gas station in the midst of country wilderness, there was another ticking. In a coffin-sized phone booth, speaking to people lost somewhere across night hills, two white-faced boys were crammed, holding to each other at every flit of bat, each sliding of cloud across the stars. Will hung up the phone. The police and an ambulance were coming. At first, he and Jim had shout-whispered, wheezed at each other, pumping along, stumbling. They should go home, sleep, forget. No, they should take a freight train west. No. For Mr. Cougar, if he survived what they'd done to him, that old man, that old, old, old man, would follow them over the world until he found and tore them apart. Arguing, shivering, they ended up in a phone booth, and now saw the police car bouncing along the road, its siren moaning with the ambulance behind. All the men looked out at the two boys whose teeth chattered in the moth-flicked light. 3 minutes later, they all advanced down the dark midway, Jim leading the way, talking, gibbering. "He's alive. He's got to be alive. We didn't mean to do it. We're sorry." He stared at the black tents. "You hear? We're sorry."
"Take it easy, boy," said one of the policemen. "Go on."
The two policemen in midnight blue, the two interns like ghosts, the two boys made the last turn past the Ferris wheel and reached the merry-go-round. Jim groaned. The horses trampled the night air in mid-plunge. Starlight glittered on the brass poles. That was all.
"He's gone.
He was here, we swear," said Jim. 150, 200 years old and dying of it."
"Jim," said Will. The four men stirred uneasily.
"They must have taken him in a tent."
Will started off. A policeman took his elbow.
"Did you say 150 years old?" he asked Jim. "Why not 300?
"Maybe he was. Oh, God!" Jim turned, yelling. "Mr. Cougar, we brought help!"
Lights blinked on in the freak tent. The huge banners out front rumbled and lashed as arc lights flushed over them.
The police glanced up. Mr. Skeleton, the Dust Witch, the Crusher, Vesuvio the Lava Sipper, danced soft, big, painted each on its separate flag. Jim paused by the rustling freak show entry.
Mr. Cougar, he pleaded, you there?
The tent flaps mouthed out a warm lion air. What? Asked a policeman. Jim read the moving flaps.
They said yes. They said come in.
Jim stepped through. The others followed. Inside, they squinted through crisscrossed tent pole shadows to the high freak platforms, and all the world wandered aliens, crippled of face, of bone, of mind, waiting there. At a rickety card table nearby, four men sat playing, orange, lime green, sun yellow cards printed with moon beasts and winged sun symboled men. Here the akimbo skeleton, one might play like a piccolo. Here the blimp, who could be punctured every night, pumped up at dawn. Here the midget, known as the wart, who could be mailed, parcel post, dirt cheap. And next to him an even littler accident of cell and time, a dwarf so small and perched in such a way you couldn't see his face behind the cards clenched before him in arthritic and tremulous oak-gnarled fingers.
The dwarf! Will started. Something about those hands. Familiar, familiar. Where? Who? What?
But his eyes snapped on. There stood Monsieur Guillotine, black tights, black long stockings, black hood overhead, arms crossed over his chest, stiff straight by his chopping machine. The blade high in the tense sky, a hungry knife all flashes and meteor shine, much desiring to cleave space. Below, in the head cradle, a dummy sprawled, waiting quick doom. There stood the Crusher, all ropes and tendons, all steel and iron, all bone-monger, jaw-crusher, horseshoe taffy-puller. And there the lava-sipper, Vesuvio of the chafed tongue, of the scalded teeth, who spun scores of fireballs up, hissing in a ferris of flame which streaked shadows along the tent roof. Nearby, in booths, another 30 freaks watched the fires fly until the lava-sipper glanced, saw intruders, and let his universe fall. The suns drowned in a water tub. Steam billowed, all froze in a tableau. An insect stopped buzzing. Will glanced swiftly. There, on the biggest stage, a tattoo needle poised like a blowgun dart in his rose-crusted hand, stood Mr. Dark, the illustrated man. His picture crowds flooded raw upon his flesh.
His picture crowds flooded raw upon his flesh.
Stripped bare to the navel, he had been stinging himself, adding a picture to his left palm with this dragonfly contraption. Now, with the insect drone dead in his hand, he wheeled. But Will, staring beyond him, cried, "There is he! There's Mr. Cougar!" The police, the interns, quickened. Behind Mr. Dark sat the electric chair. In this chair sat a ruined man, last seen strewn, wheezing in a collapse of bones and albino wax on the broken carousel. Now he was erected, propped, strapped in this device full of lightning power.
"That's him! He was dying!"
The blimp ascended to his feet. The skeleton spun about, tall. The wart flea-hopped to the sawdust. The dwarf let fall his cards and flirted his now mad, now idiot eyes ahead, around, over.
"I know him," thought Will. "Oh, God, what they've done to him."
The lightning-rod salesman, that's who it was, squeezed tight, smashed small, convulsed by some terrible nature into a clenched fist of humanity. The seller of lightning rods. But now two things happened with beautiful promptitude. Monsieur Guillotine cleared his throat, and the blade above in the canvas sky, like a homing hawk, scythed down. Whisper, whisk, slither, thunder, rush, wham! The dummy head, chop cut, fell. And falling, looked like Will's own head, own face, destroyed.
he wanted, he did not want, to run, lift the head, turn it, to see if it held his own profile. But how could you ever dare do that? Never, never in a billion years could one empty that wicker basket. The second thing happened. A mechanic, working at the back of an upright glass-fronted coffin booth, released a tripwire. This made a last cog click within the machinery under the sign, Mademoiselle Tarot, the Dust Witch. The waxwoman's figure within the glass box nodded her head and fixed the boys with her pointing nose as the boys passed, leading the men. Her cold wax hand brushed the dust of destiny on a ledge within the coffin. Her eyes didn't see. They were sewn shut with laced black widow web, dark threads. A waxworks fright, good and proper she was, and the policeman beamed, viewing her, and strolled on, and beamed at Monsieur Guillotine for his act, too. And moving, the police were relaxing now, and seemed not to mind being called late on a jolly venture into a rehearsing world of acrobats and seedy magicians. "Gentlemen!" Mr. Dark and his mob of illustrations surged forward on the pine platform, a jungle beneath each arm, an Egyptian viper scrolled on each bicep. "Welcome! You're just in time. We're rehearsing all our new acts." Mr. Dark waved, and strange monsters gaped their fangs from his chest. A cyclops, with a navel for a squinted moron eye, twitched on his stomach as he strode. Lord, thought Will, is he bringing that crowd with him, or is the crowd pulling him along by his skin? From all the creaked platforms, from the muffled sawdust, Will felt the freaks wheel and fix their eyes, enchanted, as were interns and police, by this illustrated throng of humanity that in one agglomerative move dominated and filled the immediate air and tent sky with silent shoutings for attention. Now, part of the wasp-needle tattooed population spoke. It was Mr. Dark's mouth, over and above this calligraphic explosion, this railroad accident of monsters and tumult upon his sweating skin. Mr. Dark chanted forth the organ tones from his chest. His personal, electric blue-green populations trembled, even as the real freaks on the sawdust tent floor trembled, even as hearing in their most secret marrow, Jim and Will trembled, and felt more freak than the freaks themselves. "Gentlemen, boys, we've just perfected the new act. You'll be the first to see," cried Mr. Dark. The first policeman, his hand casually nestled to his pistol holster, squinted up at that vast corral of beasts and beings. "This boy said..."
"Said?"
The illustrated man barked a laugh. The freaks leaped in a frolic of shock, then calmed as the carnival owner continued with great ease, patting and soothing his own illustrations, which somehow patted and soothed the freaks.
"Said? But what did he see? Boys always scare themselves at sideshows, eh? Run like rabbits when the freaks pop out. But tonight, especially tonight..."
The policeman glanced beyond to the erector set papier-mâché relic constricted in the electric chair.
"Who's he?"
"Him?" Will saw fire lick up through Mr. Dark's smoke-clouded eyes, saw him just as quickly snuff it out.
"The new act, Mr. Electrico."
"No, look at the old man! Look!" Will yelled. The police turned to appraise his demon cry.
"Don't you see?" said Will. "He's dead. Only thing holds him up is the straps."
The interns gazed up at the great flake of winter flung into and held by the black chair. "Oh, gosh," thought Will, "we thought it would be all simple. The old man, Mr. Cougar, dying, so we bring doctors to save him, so he forgives us. Maybe. Maybe the carnival doesn't hurt us, lets us go. But now this. What's next? He's dead. It's too late. Everyone hates us." And Will stood among the others, feeling the cold air waft down from the unearthed mummy, from the cold mouth and cold eyes locked up in frozen eyelids. Inside the frozen nostrils, not a white hair stirred. Mr. Cougar's ribs under his collapsed shirt were stone rigid, and his teeth under his clay lips were dry, ice cold. Put him out at noon, and fog would steam off him. The interns glanced at each other. They nodded. The policeman, at this, took one step forward.
Gentlemen!
Mr. Dark scuttled a tarantula hand up an electric brass switchboard.
100,000 volts will now burn Mr. Electrico's body.
No, don't let him, Will cried.
The policeman took another step. The interns opened their mouths to speak. Mr. Dark flicked a swift, demanding glance at Jim. Jim cried, No, it's all right.
Jim!
Will, yes, it's okay.
Stand back!
The spider clutched the switch handle.
This man is in a trance. As part of our new act, I have hypnotized him. He could suffer injury if you shocked him from his spell.
The interns shut their mouths. The police stopped moving.
100,000 volts, yet he will come forth alive, whole in sound, mind, and body.
No!
A policeman grabbed Will. The illustrated man and all the men and beasts asprawl in frenzies on him now snatched and banged a switch. The tent lights snuffed out. Policemen, interns, boys jumped up their flesh in cobbles and boils. But now, in the swift midnight shuddering, the electric chair was a hearth, and on it the old man blazed like a blue autumn tree. The police flinched back. The interns leaned ahead, as did the freaks, blue fire in their eyes. The illustrated man, hand glued to switch, looked upon the old man. The old man was Flint Rock dead, yes. But electricity alive sheathed over him. It swarmed on his cold shell ears. It flickered in his deep as an abandoned stone well nostrils. It crept blue eels of power on his praying mantis fingers and his grasshopper knees. The illustrated man's lips thrust wide. Perhaps he yelled, but no one heard against the immense fry, blast, the slam and sizzle of power which prowled in, around, over, under, about man and prisoning chair.
Come alive, cried the hum. Come alive, cried the storming color and light. Come alive, yelled Mr. Dark's mouth, which no one heard but Jim, reading lips, red, thunderous loud in his mind, and Will the same. Come alive!
Willing the old man to live, start up, tick, hum, work juice, summon spit, ungum spirit, melt wax soul.
He's dead!
But no one heard Will, either, no matter how he pushed against the lightning clamor.
Alive!
Mr. Dark's lips licked and savored. Alive! Come alive! He ratcheted the switch to the last notch.
Live! Live!
Somewhere dynamos protested, skirled, shrilled, moaned a bestial energy. The light turned bottle green.
Dead, dead, thought Will. But live, alive, cried machines, cried flame and fire, cried mouths of crowds of livid beasts on illustrated flesh.
So the old man's hair stood up in prickling fumes. Sparks bled from his fingernails, dripped seething spatters on pine planks. Green simmerings wove shuttles through dead eyelids. The illustrated man bent violently above the old, old, dead, dead thing, his prides of beasts drowned deep in sweat, his right hand thrust in hammering demand upon the air.
Live! Live!
And the old man came alive. Will yelled himself hoarse, and no one heard. For now, very slowly, as if roused by thunder, as if the electric fire were new dawn, one dead eyelid peeled itself slowly open. The freaks gaped. A long way off in the storm, Jim was yelling too, for Will had his elbow tight and felt the yell pouring out through the bones as the old man's lips fell apart and frightful sizzle zigzagged between lips and threaded teeth. The illustrated man cut the power to a whine, then, turning, he fell to his knees and put out his hand.
Away off up there on the platform, there was the faintest stir, as of an autumn leaf beneath the old man's shirt. The freaks exhaled. The old, old man sighed. Yes, Will thought, they're breathing for him, helping him, making him to live. Inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale. Yet it looked like an act. What could he say or do?
Lungs, so, so, so,
someone whispered. The Dust Witch, back in her glass box. Inhale. The freaks breathed. Exhale. Their shoulders slumped. The old, old man's lips trembled. Heart beat. One, two,
so, so.
The witch again. Will feared to look. A vein ticked a small watch in the old man's throat. Very slowly now, that right eye of the old man opened full wide, fixed, stared like a broken camera. It was like looking through a hole in space with no bottom forever. He grew warmer. The boys below grew colder. Now the old and terribly wise with nightmare eye was so wide and so deep and so alive all to itself in that smashed porcelain face, that there, at the bottom of the eye, somewhere, the evil nephew peered along and out at the freaks, interns, police, and Will. Will saw himself, saw Jim, two little pictures posed in reflection on that single eye. If the old man blinked, the two images would be crushed by his lid. The illustrated man on his knees turned at last and gentled all with his smile.
Gentlemen, boys, here indeed is the man who lives with lightning.
The second policeman laughed. This motion shook his hand off his holster. Will shuffled to the right. The old spittle eye followed, sucking at him with its emptiness. Will squirmed left. As did the phlegm that was the old man's gaze, while his chill lips peeled wide to shape, reshape an echoed gasp, a flutter. From deep below, the old man bounced his voice, ricocheting off the dank stone walls of his body until it fell out his mouth.
Welcome.
The word fell back in.
Welcome.
The policemen nudged each other with identical smiles.
No, cried Will suddenly. That's no act. He was dead. He'd die again if you cut the power.
Will slapped his own hand to his mouth. Oh, Lord, he thought, what am I doing? I want him alive so he'll forgive us. Let us be. But, oh, Lord, even more, I want him dead. I want them all dead. They scare me so much. I got hairballs as big as cats in my stomach.
I'm sorry, he whispered.
Don't be, cried Mr. Dark.
The freaks made a commotion of blinks and glares. What next from the statue in the cold, sizzling chair? The old, old man's one eye gummed itself, the mouth collapsed, a bubble of yellow mud in a sulfur bath. The illustrated man banged the switch a notch, grinning wildly at no one. He thrust a steel sword in the old man's empty, glove-like hand. A drench of electricity prickled from the sear music box tines of the ancient, stubbled cheeks. That deep eye showed swift as a bullet hole. Hungry for Will, it found and ate of his image. The lips steamed.
I saw the boys sneak into the tent.
The desiccated bellows refilled, then pin-punctured the swamp air out in faint wails.
We rehearsing, so I thought. Play this trick. Pretend to be dead.
Again the pause to drink oxygen like ale, electricity like wine.
Let myself fall like I was dying. The boys, screaming, ran.
The old man husked out syllable on syllable.
Ha!
Pause.
Ha!
paws.
Ha!
Electricity hem-stitched the whistling lips. The illustrated man coughed gently.
This act, it tires, Mr. Electrico.
Oh, sure. One of the policemen started.
Sorry, he touched his cap. Fine show.
Fine, said one of the interns. Will glanced swiftly to see the intern's mouth, what it looked like saying this, but Jim stood in the way.
Boys, a dozen free passes.
Mr. Dark held them out.
Here.
Jim and Will didn't move.
Well,
said one policeman. Sheepishly, Will reached up for the flame-colored tickets, but stopped as Mr. Dark said,
Your names?
The officers winked at each other.
Tell 'em, boys.
Silence. The freaks watched. Simon, said Jim.
Simon Smith.
Mr. Dark's hand, holding the tickets, constricted.
Oliver, said Will. Oliver Brown.
The illustrated man sucked in a mighty breath. The freaks inhaled. The vast, ingasped sigh might have seemed to stir Mr. Electrico. His sword twitched. Its tip leaped to spark-sting Will's shoulder, then sizzled over in blue-green explosions at Jim. Lightning shot Jim's shoulder. The policeman laughed. The old, old man's one wide eye blazed.
I dub thee asses and fools. I dub thee, Mr. Sickly, and Mr. Pale.
Mr. Electrico finished. The sword tapped them.
A short, sad life for you both.
Then his mouth slit shut, his raw eye glued over. Containing his cellar breath, he let the simple spark swarm his blood like dark champagne.
The tickets, murmured Mr. Dark. Free rides, free rides. Come any time. Come back, come back.
Jim grabbed. Will grabbed the tickets. They jumped. They bolted from the tent. The police, smiling and waving all around, followed at their leisure. The interns, not smiling, like ghosts in their white suits, came after. They found the boys huddled in the back of the police car. They looked as though they wanted to go home. Part 2. Pursuits. Chapter 25. She could feel the mirrors waiting for her in each room, much the same as you felt, without opening your eyes, that the first snow of winter has just fallen outside your window. Miss Foley had first noticed some years ago that her house was crowded with bright shadows of herself. Best then to ignore the cold sheets of December ice in the hall above the bureaus in the bath. Best skate the thin ice lightly. Paused, the weight of your attention might crack the shell. Plunged through the crust, you might drown in depths so cold, so remote, that all the past lay carved in tombstone marbles there. Ice water would syringe your veins. Transfixed at the mirror sill, you would stand forever, unable to lift your gaze from the proofs of time. Yet tonight, with the echo of the running feet of the three boys dying away, she kept feeling snowfall in the mirrors of her house. She wanted to thrust through the frames to test their weather. But she was afraid that doing this might cause all the mirrors to somehow assemble in billion-fold multiplications of self, an army of women marching away to become girls, and girls marching to become infinitely small children.